tsunami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough.
This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me. I've waited long enough.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 473 of the Tsunami Escape Podcast. I'm C. Kohler, and with me tonight is Seda.
Hello.
And Crocodile.
Evening.
Sorry for making you guys wait yesterday. I have no good excuse for why I didn't show up to record. I think it was because I had the day off. I took a vacation day on Monday, and I think I thought it was Sunday.
Yeah, it screws up your schedule.
Totally. And then, like, I was playing that game Pragmata, and I had my headphones on. And so I never heard any of the dings from my phone. So I just completely did not know that you guys were waiting around for me. Sorry about that.
No worries. No big deal.
All right. Well, we're here tonight, and we do have quite a bit to talk about. We were just talking earlier about that several of the shows, Rooster Fighter, Don to Don, Tokyo Revengers, all have a lot that happened this week. So we've got a lot to go through. And then we also have a bit of news. So the biggest news story that we'll start the show off with is that Season 3 of My Adventures with Superman has been announced and will premiere on June 13th at midnight.
We had kind of mentioned this possibility with the rerun showing up on the, like, after the block or in the rerun slot. So
yeah, it makes sense as a prelude, just to remind the Toonami audience about, you know, previous seasons and whatnot.
Now, I briefly perused, like, the Resetera thread about this season. Now, I don't know my, like, Superman lore at all, so it's kind of jargon to me. But people were, you know, discussing, like, which storyline is this maybe adapting, maybe loosely adapting. You guys know anything about that? Because I don't.
It said it was, like, Dark Reign or something, and then there's, like, Cyborg Superman or something, or, like, multiple Superman or something. I'm not really sure.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because the promo has, like, Superman, like, he looks like Cyborg, kind of, with half his face kind of metallic. So, like, the poster looks kind of dark and edgy, but, like, I don't know anything about the comic storyline and whatnot. I think some people might said Superboy might show up, because Superboy is kind of like a weird multiversal being in the comics, but I don't know how that would be adapted in the show if that were to be true. And so, and of course, we don't know what Kara's, what she's just checking up Jimmy now, or, like, that plot line, and, you know, there's a lot we don't know.
Yeah, I think it would be expected, at least as far as I'm concerned, that they would introduce another character for the season. They did Kara last season, so that seems likely they'd do someone else, maybe. The other interesting thing I noticed about the poster is that it kind of looks like, I mean, the Superman symbol is different on his chest, and I could be reading too much into it, but it kind of looks like an L.
I see what you mean. It looks kind of like Thunderbolt-y or something. I'm not sure. But yeah, it definitely looks a little different than standard issue Superman S.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Very dark. That could be indicative of the season. We don't know yet, but obviously that's a preview image for something that's going to happen. And yeah, kind of a much darker vibe. I mean, the second season was darker than the first season too. So.
Yeah. I mean, the Brainiac shit was pretty, had some darkness to it, but it also has some good amount of levity as well. So we'll see if the balance of the season is different.
So I wonder how, like, the production of this season might vary compared to the first two, because as I understand it, the first two seasons were kind of like ordered and produced more or less back to back. And then the third season, I wasn't, you know, a given, but given the relative seeming success of the first two seasons, then it was greenlit, and that's why we had to wait 2 years, you know, for this season. So It'll be curious to see how it turns out, like, in terms of you know, budget, time, how many people were on this project, and all that. So,
yeah, the first block of 20 was ordered together as a block, and they just split it up in two seasons. So this one was no guarantee that this season would actually ever exist. So,
one last thing I'll note about the poster too is that it doesn't say Toonami on it. Now, we can infer that it will be part of Toonami since it's at midnight, but I just noticed that they didn't mention it.
Yeah, I mean, there's no other, it has to be, like, the time is just, it's Toonami time, so.
Yeah, I mean, and that wasn't the way it was for the first two seasons, right? It premiered on earlier in the evenings.
It premiered on, I think, Thursday before, it would premiere on Thursday, and then the rerun would be on Saturday, I believe, which would be Toonami time.
So So this will be a premiere on Toonami.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's kind of interesting. Okay. So yeah, look forward to that in, a little over a month from now, we will have a second season of what we, I think, all agree is a pretty good show. So that's got that to look forward to. The other piece of news we have was something we mentioned last week, is that they did do a Mortal Kombat 2 movie tie-in this past weekend, and it was just a trailer, and they showed it an extended preview is what they called it, but it's basically a trailer. I don't really have a lot to say about it. It looks like Mortal Kombat. It looks good. Used a lot of sound clips from the game. I mean, I don't know. I'd like that Carl Urban is playing Johnny Cage. That's kind of cool.
I didn't see the first movie, but I think I heard the first movie mostly starred in OC. I don't know if Johnny Cage was actually in the first movie, but I think now they're making a big transition to be like focusing on just pure Mortal Kombat characters rather than Mortal Kombat OCs. At least that's my understanding. Again, I didn't see the first film, but that's kind of what I heard and whatnot.
That's a good point. I don't remember him being a part of the first movie's promotions. I didn't see it. But I think I would have heard of that if they had had Johnny Cage in it before, if it had been this actor. So yeah, sounds like they did something different with the first movie. And that's it. That's all we've got for the news. So yeah, big news though. Superman, great characters coming back to the block.
So that's replacing Rooster Fighter, probably. We might have said that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that should confirm that Rooster Fighter is about 13 episodes, unless we're doing something weird on Memorial Day. But yeah.
Yep.
And, we always get ahead of ourselves too much, but Donda Don Season 2 ends not too long after that, so.
Oh, I think that's worth mentioning. I kind of didn't even think about it. You're right, though.
Yeah, because we have like 5 episodes left of Rooster Fighter and maybe 6 episodes left of Donda Don, something like that, so.
Yeah, I was going to say there are too many episodes of Donda Don left for it to be replaced by Superman, but you're correct that shortly after Superman premieres, Donda Don will be ending, so.
And finally, Dr. Stone will come.
Oh my God, I wish. We don't really have anything else in the pipeline that's going to happen soon. I know that the Ninja Kamui is kind of on the horizon, but that's probably a ways out, I assume.
I assume probably 2027.
Yeah, I think that was the most recent announcement, so it's probably a bit out. I guess besides Ninja Kamui, is there anything else in the wings?
I'm thinking. Now, I'm asking that question specifically because I'm trying to gauge, are we going to get a Toonami show, or are we going to get acquisition? Yeah.
I don't remember any other Toonami originals on the horizon besides the Ninja Kamui season, so yeah. I suspect it'll be an acquisition.
Yeah, because for a while, I know this isn't all anime, but like we knew that the Adult Swim like originals in the works were like Primal, Rooster Fighter, Superman, and Ninja Kamui, and that we've seen now all of those, mm-hmm. more or less, except Ninja Kamui. So,
the last thing I'll mention too is that you mentioned this is something I'd been thinking about. Is that I remember several years ago when Jason DeMarco was talking about like where they were going with Toonami in general. And they said they really wanted to push to have original IPs, things that they controlled. And I feel like they've kind of done that. I mean, it hasn't been like the whole block or anything, but they've certainly over the past couple of years done a lot of their own stuff premiere wise. But I feel like, yeah, like you're saying right now, with the exception of the Ninja Kamui sequels, I think we've kind of hit the end of that.
I mean, I think they've had something on Toonami. That's a Toonami original, at least one show per year, right? And then this year, that'd be kind of like multiple. Like Primal kind of counts, kind of doesn't count. Superman kind of counts, kind of doesn't count. But at least Rooster Fighter 100% counts. So like,
and Lazarus wasn't that long ago.
Oh, true. No. Well, yeah, Lazarus definitely counts. So if Ninja Kamui, the next season comes in 2027, they've been consistently about at least once every year. They've had at least one Toonami original, and I would not be surprised if I think Comic-Con. Is July or something? Or
I think San Diego Comic-Con is the one that they tend to like show stuff at whenever that is.
Yeah,
so there's like New York Comic-Con and San Diego, but San Diego is the one they seem to have announcements at for Adult Swim in general.
And isn't there one in Atlanta, Georgia or something? Because I know Adult Swim is based out of Georgia. Don't they do something
there? There is MomoCon, which is more of an anime convention, so it's possible.
Yeah, and I would say with like Rooster Fighter, I feel like they've really kind of done a pretty good job so far. We're I think all pretty critical of the Toonami originals because they've had some not so great ones, and I think Rooster Fighter has overall so far been quite entertaining. So it's a good one that for them to kind of stop on for a while if this is going to be the last one for a while. But I will be honest, as much as I'm not against Toonami originals, but I kind of really do want to see a couple of like big hit shows come back to the block. You know what I mean? Just, I don't know. I just,
you get excited. Blue Lock and you'll like it.
No, that's unfortunate.
I mean, a big issue is that it's just become harder for them to get the big shows. So in their absence, they have to turn to more originals. So
yeah, I get it. But I'm kind of also hoping, I have nothing to base this on, but I'm just kind of thinking, well, if they're not spending money right now to make something, hopefully they're spending money on getting something. That's what I'm hoping. All right. Speaking of Rooster Fighter, like I said, we got a lot to talk about. So let's get into it. And we'll talk about Rooster Fighter. Something's broken. A story for the beyond. Do you look at it? Do you hear it? Got any? Don't think, don't think, so let's jump into it. Cuck, 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 cuck. Are you ready, ready? Cuck, 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 cuck. Now let's go. Cuck, 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 cuck. Are you ready, ready? Cuck, 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 cuck. Now let's go. Rooster Fighter Episode 8. Not all feathers hold a song. This episode starts out and it's kind of a flashback to what was happening to Kisuke and his father, because we kind of saw the end of this little flashback at the end of the previous episode, but we're seeing it, the kind of more of that here. Apparently they're out wandering around, also working on taking down demons, and they come across this human boy who also turns out to possibly be one of those demon people. We'll learn later that they're actually devils, but at this point we don't know what he is. And he actually ends up saving a woman from this fish demon, but they kind of follow this guy, this kid, and they realize that this kid is taking the fish demon and that he's collecting them. He's part of a group of them that are collecting demons.
Big thing to note is that this quote unquote kid who we find as a devil later, he punctures the fish demon in the head with his finger. This is the same way as that woman from the previous episode did to Morio, which of course will become relevant very soon, but like it's just the exact same technique. So just kind of highlighting the kind of similarity, and then kind of everything kind of comes together near the end, given even that bit of foreshadowing.
Yeah, I don't know about you guys, but I certainly thought that Morio was killed with that action, but you're right. It turns out they weren't. And this is part of their like ability to control these demons. Anyway, we get to the part where these demons have captured Kisuke's father, and they see, and we kind of see a little bit of what we'd seen before, where they're like in this warehouse or something, and they're all like, all the big demons are there, and we get a little bit of detail here. We learn that the chickens, Kisuke and his father, and as we'll learn later, of course, Keiji and his sister, are all part of what's called the Goshiki Dori family. And this Goshiki Dori family are apparently a family of chickens who have a long history of fighting demons.
Yeah, pretty normal stuff.
Yeah. This is one of those things where I just take it at stride at this point. And this is when these human looking people reveal themselves, is that we're not demons. We're not demons. We're devils. We are devils. There's a big tall one, and he ends up like fighting them. And he has like, I just called it like Barrett's arm. He basically has like a giant gun on his arm.
Yeah. And it's we kind of briefly mentioned this in a previous episode also. There's four of these devils that are shown in the opening. There's the woman, there's these two, and then there's a fourth one, which in the opening we see his back. Yeah. He's got like a vest on. He's like got like a wine glass. We haven't actually been introduced to him in the show yet, but like, okay, he must be like the leader or something like that.
Just gonna do a call shot. I wouldn't be surprised if that guy was actually the white demon that ate, KG's
sister. At least related to that.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, they do. I thought about that too, but they do show the white demon, in this opening as well. Like the big giant version we've seen before. But it could be the same character.
But yeah, I just wanted to point out that these four like devils, or there's four of them that are shown in the opening, and we have now been introduced to three of them.
Yep. They're kind of fighting here, but then one of them mentions, as I wrote this, I thought this was important. One of them mentions that they're not actually allowed to kill these chickens. They say they're not allowed to kill them. And I just thought, well, that's strange. I don't understand that. I'm sure that'll be revealed later, but I don't know if you guys caught that, but they said you're not allowed to kill them.
What are you referring to, Piyoko, or just all of them in general?
No, I remember the gun guy was like shooting Kisuke, and then the winged boy was like, "Hey, don't kill them." And I don't remember exactly why, but
yeah.
They were like arguing amongst each other like, "Hey, you can't, you know, be careful because you're not allowed to kill them," kind of thing.
Right. I definitely remember specifically writing down the word allowed, knowing that they weren't allowed to.
It's probably a directive from their quote-unquote mother, who we'll get into shortly.
Right. But why and who, I guess we don't know yet. Oh, by the way, the boy we learn later, it is kind of revealed, his name is Hikari. So anyway, that's what the boy's name is. Okay, what? And then we cut over and we see like a scene with our main troop, trio. Piyoko has like a moment where she's kind of like reminiscing in that she misses her pops. Kisuke is being like tended, his wounds are being tended to by Elizabeth. And then I don't know, she's just kind of flirting with him here. I think she's just sort of teasing, just kind of like she realizes he's one of these characters. Kisuke is one of the tropes where it's like anytime he's around a girl, he gets like all flustered.
Yeah, I think she's just playing with him. Like,
yeah,
she has no feelings for him or anything like that. She's just like, oh, I observe that you are nervous around women, so I'm just gonna tease you just for fun. Like, literally.
Yeah, Elizabeth's just being a dick here. She's just being a dick for
yeah, I think she's just enjoying reveling and like making him squirm. And then Kisuke, you know, he mentions, Keiji, you're my older brother. And Keiji's like, I don't really know what you're talking about. And he says, don't you remember? Keiji kind of goes like, wait, were you that kid? And then we cut to this long flashback where we see Keiji as a child with his father and his mother. And basically, the short of it, because there's a lot that happens here. Basically, the short of it is that Keiji's father was sleeping around like roosters do, I guess. And he knocked up his mom and then left. And this is where he first met a young version of his half-brother. We learn his half-brother is Kisuke. And Keiji basically, when we come back from the flashback, says that he hates his father because he left him and his mom, who later died after giving birth.
I think it's a little bit strange, maybe. I mean, not strange, but like, he's like, I will never forgive that man for being so, you know, like unfaithful or whatever. And like, here's Keiji just kind of just like sleeping around.
That is a pretty big difference because Keiji's father left, like formed a family, left that family for a new family. And then his mother died of heartbreak. Keiji is not like forming a family or getting married or whatever. If chickens get married, whatever in this universe, he's like, there's a difference between like doing one night stands and then like getting with a woman, raising a child, then leaving them for another woman and raising a new child. That's a whole different level of scumbaggery.
I get it. I just still feel like it's like,
yeah, it's a little hypocritical. I will say too, though, that like, I think it's also connected to the fact that his mom died giving birth to Sarah, and that's part of it too.
Yeah. It's, I think it's different enough that I wouldn't really call KG hypocrite here. Like, he is also kind of loose of women, but this is a whole new level. Like, I think his rage to his father pretty justified here, honestly.
I also feel too, that I don't know, maybe I was reading too much into it, but I get this impression that maybe his father was leaving due to this like responsibility that their family has to fight demons, possibly. I don't know.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if it was revealed there was some other reason besides his father being a piece of shit. Like, that's lots of narratives are like that. You thought your parent or whoever was actually terrible, but like they're actually doing it for good reasons. I mean, it's kind of like Sasuke and Itachi. Like, Itachi murdered his whole clan. You're like, oh, this is a piece of shit. And then you find out that there's actually like kind of almost legitimate reasons to do that, almost kind of.
Yeah. So anyway, the brothers get kind of angry. Or, well, Keiji gets really mad at Kisuke, and he's like, our dad's a piece of shit or whatever. And at this point, throughout everything we've seen of Keisuke so far, he's been very humble and nice, but he actually starts to get mad here. And he's like, stop besmirching our father. And then he decides to fight, and they have a fight, and it's very cool. However, it's very clear right away that Kisuke is much more skilled than his brother. He's kind of making easy work of Keiji here.
I do think it's a circumstance of not that Kisuke is stronger, but as you said, better trained. Because we see like a lot of Kisuke's moves are kind of sloppy. I just think it's a matter of fact that Their father left Keisuke and actually trained him, but of course Keiji was left as a child, so he never trained. He just like learned how to get tough on his own. So there's just that difference in kind of again, not power, but just training. And I would not be surprised if, and we also see like Keisuke, like the way he activates, he has a power too. It's like a fire kick or an energy kick or something, but he activates it in a very different controlled way than Keiji does with his sonic boom, whatever it is. And I think that's part of their training. I think it's, I would not be surprised if the next few episodes, Keiji does some sort of training or like realizes how to, you know, hone his skills or use it with more depth or something, and that kind of closes the gap. But I think here it's a more function of training just due to their. The father was in Keisuke's life, but not in Keiji's life, and that was different.
That makes sense.
I think so too. I mean, I think it's pretty much what's Keiji's inner monologue is saying. He's like, I don't understand how this kid's so strong. When we come back from the commercial break, Keiji's kind of like tending to his wounds, and he's just really angry about the fact that he's weak. He just wasn't expecting this little punk Keisuke to be so good at fighting. And this is when we learn, I kind of mentioned this earlier, but we learned that that their family has a duty, a long-standing duty to fight demons. I'm assuming generationally they've been fighting demons for a while.
I think they said that demons didn't appear in the world until about 3 years ago?
You know, maybe they did, which doesn't make a lot of sense.
I wonder if there's maybe like, oh, demons were hidden until recently, or it's a matter of just new, demons, but maybe monsters in general, and now demons are a new form of monster I have to fight. I'm curious how they flesh this out, because I definitely remember near the start of the series, they said demons weren't like a thing for hundreds of years or something.
Yeah, it could be like Demon Slayer, where there's always been them, but they're in the shadows or something until recently. That's the way I'll take it for now, because it definitely seemed like they had generationally been doing this. The other thing I wrote down here is that Keiji scoffs. I just wrote Keiji scoffs, and I don't remember why. Maybe he scoffs at the fact that I don't remember why I wrote that.
I think
that.
Didn't Keisuke like surprise him? Like Keiji was like brooding and like Levis and Pyoko watching him brood, and Keisuke came back and says, "Hey, I still need your help," or something of that sort. And then Keiji was like surprised. Was that?
Maybe. I don't know. Oh, anyway.
Well, I guess we should mention that Keiji never learned of this duty. Like, this is news to him. So
yeah,
well, his father wasn't around, so
right, but I'm just saying, like, he never knew of this history of his family and whatnot. So like Keisuke was explaining it to Keiji. Keiji's like, I've never heard of this. This is the first time I'm hearing about this. So
this would be a little bit cliche, but you know, this show kind of seems to revel in like cliches, but you know, chicken style. So it kind of has its own little
cliche chicken style.
Well, like I could see his
the Colonel Sanders secret recipe or something.
Yeah, well, I could see like KG's father being like, you know, I didn't tell you this and I left because I was trying to protect you, type of thing, you know, try to keep you away from this life.
Right.
Oh, I
sort of thing. He's not actually as big a piece of shit as we think he is, kind of thing that happens all the time.
Like, I wanted you and your sister to have a normal life, but I couldn't tell you why I had to leave, type of thing, blah, blah, blah.
I think it could work either way, whether he was trying to protect Keiji, that would be interesting, or if he's just straight up, like, didn't care and left.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Sarah was born after he left, so I'm not even sure the father's aware that Sarah existed, but we'll see. Yeah, but
possible.
Well, anyway, Elizabeth is checking the cell phone, smartphone, which Keisuke is like, oh my gosh, you have a smartphone and you can use it. Anyway, she's looking up stuff and she's seeing that Akimori City is being attacked by giant demons. So they decide all to rush there to fight the demons. And when they get there, they see an octopus demon.
Well, when do they see Morio? They see Morio like on the like newscast or whatever. They don't actually see him in person.
That's right. It's just on the phone. Okay.
That's what prompts him to actually go, because Keiji didn't care until Elizabeth showed him Morio, and he was like, "What the fuck? We know Morio's a good guy. What's going on?" That's them to actually go, Keisuke. Not
I was confused because he shows up in the preview, and that's
right.
Me off. But anyway, okay. Anyway, so yeah, they go there looking for Morio and you know, fight the demons, but what they come across is this octopus demon. Now Elizabeth recognizes this demon as well. She's like, oh, this is one of the good demons. It was when she saw like a picture of it, that it was fighting fires, you know, and stuff like that. It was a good demon. She's like, this one's turned bad. So she doesn't want them to hurt it, even though the boys are kind of like fighting against it, but they're also simultaneously fighting each other. And she's like, get out of the way. And she's like, I'll capture it. And so she does like a move where she just basically ties it up.
She does Attack on Titan, basically.
Yeah, or like Empire Strikes Back, you know, kind of thing.
Where, toe cable.
You know, toe cable, yeah. And while this is happening and the octopus demon is captured, that boy with the wings, Hikari, is watching secretly nearby.
No, an imp demon is watching, and that imp demon goes off to tell them later. Like a kappa or imp demon or something?
Yeah, it's like a new character.
Okay, yeah, I've got his name here. His name is Funakichi, and I wrote this down too, that he is a kappa. I mean, I don't think they refer to him as a kappa, but he looks exactly like one.
With wings, though, which kappas don't tend to
have. Yeah, I guess. But he has the head and the of a kappa for sure. And he reports in to the other devils. And this is when we see the Hikari kind of kneeling down in front of somebody. And it's the green-eyed woman we'd seen before. And we learn that she is actually his mother.
Or at least he refers to her as the mother. We don't know if they actually have that sort of relationship, but they refer to her as mother.
Yeah, okay. Fair enough. I mean, yeah, definitely is calling her mom. And yeah, that's the episode. A lot of happens in this. A lot of lore dropping in this Rooster Fighter episode.
And now we have the rival brother character.
Turned out to be quite different than what I was expecting. Like I said, I think he was going to be more of the dark and sort of kind of angry Vegeta type character. But he's actually much more like kind of, I don't want to say wimpy, but like he's just like reserved and younger brother.
I think honorable is the right word. I mean, I want to say Dante and Virgil, but he's not Virgil. He doesn't have that power hunger streak to him. He's more, I'm sure there's an analogy I could come up with.
He's just like a good-natured kid. He's like the good kid.
Yeah.
To KAG's, like, I don't know. He's like the sort of like the Yakuza type guy, sort of almost. And yeah, this guy's like, Kisuke is much more like a prim and proper good warrior.
So like lawful good versus neutral good or something like that.
Yeah. Any other thoughts about this episode, guys, you want to share before we move on?
The one thing I want to bring up is that I didn't realize the short-haired devil was named Hikari. I think Hikari, isn't that light in Japanese?
Hikari, yeah.
I think so.
Okay, so I bring it up because obviously Lucifer is angel of light. Hikari, devils. I'm sure there's kind of, maybe it's not some subtle connection going on here. And so that's just what came to mind once I realized that was his name. It could be mean nothing. Maybe just choose it for the shits and giggles, but those sorts of connections just popped in my mind from, given they probably call themselves devils and kind of like try to distinguish themselves from demons and whatnot.
Yeah. I think the big takeaway for me is that we are kind of learning what a little bit of what's going on with these people, these devils. They're rounding up demons and they're making them work for them to fight for them. So yeah, to what end, we don't know. They just may be bad people, but they haven't really done anything bad to anyone other than these devils they're capturing. So I'm not sure, but
I mean, the demons they're controlling have been messing up cities, right? So
it's obviously that is true. They do have them out wrecking cities. That's true.
Now why? Who knows?
Yeah. Probably because they're devils, but we'll see. Okay, that's it for Rooster Fighter. Let's move on to another packed episode. This time, Dandadan. Dandadan Season 2, Episode 6, We Became a Family. They kind of do. So we've still got this issue with Gigi. We got to get the evil eye exercised out of him. So in comes this heavy metal band called the Hayashi, and they have arrived at Seiko's place. And at first, Seiko's kind of like, who are you? Get, you know, we don't need you around here. And they're like, no, you asked us to come.
Yeah, there's some sort of just kind of like, I don't know if deadpan's the right word, but kind of like deadpan humor where they're like, we're here. And she's like, go away. And they're like, yes, ma'am. And they start to leave. And then they come back like, wait a minute. We're supposed to be here. Are you Seiko?
Yeah, they introduce themselves. Like, it first looks like they're just a bunch of weird randos, so they get kicked out, and then they come back and then introduce themselves, and then Seiko's like, oh, yeah, I ordered the Hayashi. Come over here, put on the table over here.
So they plug in all their band equipment. By the way, they kind of talk in like their lead singer always speaks in like heavy metal rhyme and.
It should be stated up front that for the English dub, the lead singer of this band is this lead singer from the band in real life, Dragon Force. They
Oh,
actually
I didn't
got
know
him.
that.
Yeah,
That's
I think he's
great.
British or something. But yeah, they reached out to him and he came to do this dub. And so, yeah, they got a real metal musician to do all this. And so it's.
That's like amazing that they went that far to do that.
It's worth it because this next sequence is amazing.
Yeah, this is the best nominating us for best moment, like
Absolutely.
I was gonna say the same thing, but yeah.
So basically, real quick, Seiko says that these guys are not mediums. They cannot detect spiritual pressure or whatever they call it in this show.
Sure,
But
for sure.
she says that their music is so powerful that it can move the dead and it can move the afterlife.
And she actually even mentions that the fact that they can't, that they are actually not spirit attuned is actually like a good thing because they'd be like overwhelmed otherwise.
Like they
So
can't
they're
see
kind of
the
they're.
like they can't really interact with the spirits like directly, so they can't be like possessed or like influenced is basically what she's saying.
So they
The
plug in all their
interactions in another
equipment.
way.
I like the shot too, where you see like 1,000 electrical cords and they're all sparking and stuff. And it's like they're getting ready to play. They start, and it's this amazing rock, heavy metal concert starts. At first, Ira is not impressed.
Yeah, she's like holding her ears and everything.
And then they begin playing their song, which is called Exorcism Song. That's the name of the song. And all the lyrics are about that, which is really great. And then everybody gets into it. Everyone, including Arya, is
Ira.
Ira. I keep saying Arya. Ira, they're all headbanging. It's full on amazing. The animation's amazing. The music's amazing.
Seiko was hangbanging too, mentioned
She's headbanging
importantly.
as she's performing the rites to get him out. The evil eye is trying to like. It's squirming around inside Gigi, and so she asks Momo to use her psychic powers to hold Gigi down, and they're getting really close. The power of the music and everything is getting really close to exorcising the evil eye. But then Gigi himself explains, like, no, don't kill the evil eye, don't. Because remember, several episodes ago, like he saw the evil eye's past, and he feels sorry for him.
It's important to note that also Momo sees it as well, similar to when she did the
Oh, that's right.
spirit transfusion between Ira and the or acrobatic Selkie. She could see all those memories of the Selkie too. So like, this is another moment where Momo's involved using her psychic powers to try to help, and then she sees the flashbacks or the sad memories, whatever, of the spirit as well. So.
And so Gigi pleads, and it's enough that once the music stops, Seiko gets up and she's like, all right, I'm calling it off.
No, she pleads Gigi pleads with Seiko to stop the exorcism, not with the evil eye. And eventually Seiko
That's what
like
I said.
no, you said plead with the evil eye, or at least that's what I heard you say.
Anyway, whatever.
And
Okay,
Seiko
Gigi.
stops the music rather than it stopping, like she's back there.
Okay, fair enough. Gigi doesn't want it to happen. The music is ended, and Seiko calls it off. She calls off the exorcism. She's like, all right, I'm going to put my faith in you. And all the friends sort of vow to protect Gigi. And then Seiko tells Gigi that he needs to practice his spiritual energy control if he's going to try to live with this super powerful demon inside him. Okay, that's the end of the first half of the show. In the second half, everyone's living at the house now, of course, but the house is like partially destroyed. So there's just like cardboard and other bits kind of holding things together.
Yeah, I don't know if this is really probably worth mentioning, is that like even just a split second of the evil eye, causing chaos, like destroys like the building. Like it doesn't take long for that building just to go.
Because at the concert here at the very end, it starts raining. After he promised, like, oh, we're going to stay together and we're going to protect you, Gigi, and we'll deal with Evil Eye, it starts raining. And then Gigi, like, transforms for a moment and starts knocking things around. And they hold him, they get him, they got the hot water on him to change it back. There was a little moment kind of just highlighting, like, oh, you made a promise to, like, protect him and do all this thing. And it's like, oh, okay, it's actually going to be a gigantic pain in the ass.
Yeah. And so we cut to the next evening or the current evening or whatever. And it's the middle of the night. And Gigi has to go up and go to the bathroom. And as part of this, Okarun also gets up to sort of escort Gigi to the bathroom, kind of keep an eye on him, you know. And this is kind of like a really kind of long sequence. I like it. It's a great sequence, but it's just very long and not a lot of words. It's just sort of illustrating that Okarun is really going out of his way here to help Gigi. And Gigi's very appreciative of this. And he says, you know, hey, you know, I really do appreciate what you're doing for me here. And then he says, well, Seiko had she had given me a talk after I'd gotten my powers. And she basically said that I needed to pay it forward. And they all both kind of have a moment where they kind of like, wow, Seiko is actually really cool. Like, she's a cool person.
Yeah. Seiko sometimes comes across as sort of like stubborn or, you know, she's very knowledgeable and powerful and capable, of course. But like, she's not always so like altruistic, it feels. But this time felt like, you know, she had some like poignant words of well-meaning words for Okarun in this moment, which is nice.
Yeah, I mean, she definitely came across to me as being like wizened mm-hmm. when we saw that scene. We cut to the next morning and we see a little sequence of Ira getting up and sort of doing her makeup. Meanwhile, Momo doing her wake-up routine in the background is very different.
I'll say that this morning routine by Ira is actually kind of a pretty cool flex by the animators. They really didn't have to do this, but they did it, and it was like just on like kind of like a presentation, production, animations perspective, it was actually a pretty cool sequence.
Yeah, it's great. And I agree that I think it's also a really good window into her character, because you can really get an impression of like the amount of work she puts into to making her appearance the way it is, because that's part of her persona. She and Momo, of course, fight at breakfast a little bit about the fact that, you know, well, they just argue like they always do.
It's their thing.
Yeah. The trio, they go to school. And then when later when Momo's in her class, her two gal pals are there and she's like, I need to get a job. I want to get a job. And then there's this other girl that they mention, I think with glasses, that they kind of like, oh, well, you know, talk to her. I think you can maybe know something about a job through her or something like that. And anyway, she ends up getting the job off screen. And then the gals are like, get this idea in their head. They're like, oh, this is going to be great. This is going to be great. And they just sort of like kidnap Okarun.
They pretty much do. Like, he's not in a bag or knocked out or anything.
No, but it's essentially forced against his will. It's like, you're going to go here. And they just drag him down the street.
And yeah, it's kind of exaggerated. It's exaggerated for goofs and for laughs. But they're dragging him across the floor. He like holds on to like a signpost or something and they have to pry him off of it. it's kind of like cartoonish, but fun. They're basically like wingmen, only wing girls.
Totally.
Because I think I mentioned this last season. They were the first one who basically said, yeah, Okarun is Momo's boyfriend. Even like well before they realized it themselves. So they're just trying to set them up.
Yeah, they'll defend the pair from others. They even tried to defend them from when Gigi was trying to joking that he was an item of Momo.
Yeah, they're like, Momo's already got a boyfriend. It's Okarun. Like, they saw it before anyone else.
They drag him to this like area of town where to the point where like Okarun's like, I shouldn't even be in this area of town. And at this point, I still, as a viewer, I don't know what's going on. And they end up like pushing him into this maid cafe. And before we see what happens next, I kind of thought, well, are they just like having fun and just trying to get Okarun to be embarrassed at a maid cafe? That's kind of what I thought was going to happen. And then we see two maids walk forward. One of them is Momo. This is her job. So she's working at a maid cafe there.
Yeah, someone's going to be embarrassed today, but it may not be Okarun. No, it's probably going to be Okarun too. But he's obviously not the main target of embarrassment.
Right. And so that's the episode there. That's where it ends. They're going to meet at the Momo's new job, which she is working in a maid cafe, which is fun on an unexpected thing I did not see coming. Yeah, great episode. Yes, this heavy metal band was awesome. The stuff with the revelations of like, I knew we all kind of assumed, and I know you knew already, Crocodile, but I mean, I'm assuming you and I say to both kind of just assumed that Gigi would keep his power. Like, they weren't going to exercise the evil eye.
Yeah. I figured there'd be some like kind of like Iroh, where there'd be some lingering, or I guess Iroh and Okarun, where there's like his power, their power is some sort of lingering effect of their possession. So I knew it had to manifest somehow. So
right, it seems like that's the pattern, is that somebody will get possessed and then they'll keep the power. Yeah. But yeah, great episode. Any other thoughts you want to share, guys?
I just think the animation in the show, like even in just like the quieter moments, is just amazing.
I agree. I mean, as much as I love the heavy metal sequence in this show and this episode, I liked those quiet scenes as well. I thought that's where the show to me like feels like it elevates itself a bit above other shows where there's like craft there. That seems really well done.
Yeah, Silent Sorrow really elevated. I mean, I've not read the original manga, but like even just looking, watching, absorbing the show, I think they've done a good job just expressing it and elevating it.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
I also liked, this is not as like, you know, there's when they're going to school, I kind of liked how Gigi was being his kind of usual self, kind of like saying, have fun at school, guys. Have fun at school. Have a good day, guys. Have a good day. And he's just kind of like being goofy and like waving and wildly. And, you know, like he's silly and he always does that. But he's, I don't know. I also kind of found it kind of nice that he's just like, he is, and this is more truly said in the scene before that, where he's like really is appreciative of kind of everyone else sort of, they accepted his proposal to let the evil eye survive. And now he's like appreciating their, I guess, what they have to do and what he's not able to do, those sorts of things.
I think I may have said this before, but Gigi's a character who I think could become in another show could have been really annoying or could have been like a cringy character. And I think they're doing a really good job with him in this show where he's over the top, but he's also like a really, he's the kind of guy you're like, I wouldn't mind having him as a friend. He's kind of cool. You know, he's fun. He's such, I think it's just his overwhelming like positivity, basically.
I feel like there's a pattern of characters in Don Don where you'll get introduced and you're like, oh God, here comes this trope, this motherfucker or fatherfucker, whatever. Like here's this, you know, oh no, here we go again with this trope. And then you get to know them for like 5 minutes and you're like, oh, this person's actually fucking cool. I like them quite a bit.
Yeah, that's true.
Glad they're here.
We've seen a couple of them already. Yeah. Okay. So that's Don Don. Let's move on to the Blue Lock. Blue Lock, episode 13, top three. Oh, Crocodile's got to head out. Thanks for being here, Crocodile, and we'll talk to you next week. So we are in the second selection, third stage. This is the three-on-three battles. During the game, no, to remind you, it is Isagi,
Batra, and Nagi.
Thank you. And then against this other team who is led by this really powerful soccer player named Rin. And then there's, I don't have the names, but I call one of them is the scaredy cat one. And then the other one is the glamour guy.
Yeah. It's a glamour guy and anxiety guy is what I wrote, what I called.
Yeah. Yeah. Anxiety is probably the better descriptor for that guy. Anyway, they start their game. Isagi pretty rapidly, very quickly gets a score in, and he's, you know, he's feeling pretty good about it. But the Rin guy, who for the whole episode is just not only completely arrogant, but also like just a dick, and is just being like, he's just completely unimpressed. He's like, oh, you thought that was good?
Yeah, this guy is meant to like very clearly meant to be like get under your skin, like asshole, you know, only out for himself, big headed guy. He also like compares soccer to like war. And there's even like imagery of like soldiers. Like this is a battle.
Yeah, yeah. He says, this is a fight to the death. Mm-hmm. I fight to the death here. And yeah, and for the whole episode, he's also very much like, I don't want to deal with any of you people. You're all just stepping.
You're way beneath me.
Yeah, you're so beneath me. You're in my way. I just have to get through this because I have to. But other than that, you're just a waste of my time.
and I missed the last episode of the podcast, but he's also like the younger brother of that one guy who was introduced like several episodes ago, like many episodes ago. That's like a actual professional soccer player, right?
Oh, but he's that guy's brother. Oh, I knew he was a brother of like a really big player, but I didn't put it together. It was that guy.
I might be wrong. I think some of these characters sometimes look similar, but I think when they said he was a, I think it was that guy. We haven't seen that guy since that one episode he was introduced in, and it feels like forever ago. That was like episode.
It was like
four.
The second episode,
maybe. But yeah. Anyways, his brother is like an actual professional, and so this guy kind of has probably high aspirations and like a brother complex, probably. So
yeah.
Oh, also one thing I also didn't realize. This is more so in the last episode, but in this episode, I guess I didn't realize how tall Nagi is.
Hmm.
He even mentions at one point, I think in this episode, because that glamour guy, I guess his ability is he can like he has like long limbs and can jump high.
Yes.
And Nagi's like, I'm 190 centimeters, and this guy even like outreached me, and like, how tall is that in American? Like, oh, that's 6'2", which is pretty tall, especially for a Japanese person.
Yeah.
Because I think the first time we met Nagi, he was being like piggybacked. So I kind of assumed he was a little smaller, but no, he's pretty big. He's significantly taller than like Bachira or Isagi.
Yeah, I don't think they do a good enough job of illustrating that. Because when he mentioned it, I don't think I'd known until that moment.
I think I did realize at one point, like, wow, they're really, I think I did realize in the art and the animation that he was taller than I expected. But that's when he actually mentioned that he's like out explicitly like, I'm tall and even this guy out jumps me.
So the rest of the first half of the episode is basically a highlighting of the two other teammates on the bad guy team. So the glamour guy, like you said, he uses his great, he's so tall and he has such long limbs that he's able to get great reach. And he surprises Nagi with his ability to steal the ball. And he ends up scoring. And then likewise, the what did you call him? Neurotic. Yeah.
Anyway, I call him anxiety guy.
He basically, his whole thing is that he becomes so he has so much anxiety that it just kind of makes him go insane, and he suddenly has insane speed and strength. So it's like super adrenaline, and he ends up doing great work too. So it's like. He goes crazy, and then that just ends up making him really good.
He's like fast and like unpredictable. Like Isagi's trying to like, you know, he's going to go left. Wait, right? Like, can't predict what this guy's going to do because he's just nuts.
Yeah, he's just a crazy guy. And even they're even saying that. It's like, that guy's insane.
Mm-hmm.
I think I kind of called that or we called that a couple episodes ago. All right. Anyway, come back from the commercial break. The good guys try to use a link up play. They call it a link up play where the three of them are going to create like a triangle, and it's going to work. But then Rin is there and he's like scolding Isagi, and he's like, I wrote down here that Rin figures it out, but Bachira and Nagi read each other, which means that they're like Bachira and Nagi are kind of on the same wavelength, and they're like kind of reading each other's moves. Like, I knew you were going to do that.
Yeah, that's what I kind of read out of it, is they're sort of like, they have like each have their own abilities, but they're kind of like finding themselves in sync.
Yeah,
you know, even without like thinking about it.
It doesn't really matter though, because Rin is just mocking them, and he ends up shooting. But as he shoots the ball, Isagi senses it. But it doesn't matter. Rin scores by using what's called a difficult corner kick. It was like a kick, I guess, that was just been like. Isagi just couldn't imagine it was possible.
Yeah, you have to have like crazy spin and arc on a ball to like get it to like arc like that from the corner, basically almost do like a U-turn into the goal to a place where the goalie can't reach. You know, I'm not a soccer player, but I imagine doing that sort of kick is very difficult and technically impressive.
One of my notes here just says so much exposition.
Yeah, we don't need to explain every single shot, but basically what I gather from this is sort of like a Keikaku type of thing where Isagi gets like the second goal and he's like, aha, I got this goal. I figured it out. I have a strategy here. And then he kind of later realizes, wait, me getting that goal was part of Rin's plan to like get me off guard, to think I knew, to make me think I know. I had a strategy, but that was actually his strategy the whole time to make me think that. And like, I was never in charge, or, you know, I was never in control. He was the whole time, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Rin says that he could see everything that Isagi could see. Rin could see all of it. He was almost as if he could see through Isagi's eyes. And ultimately, the bad guys win.
And so, like, the original goal was for Isagi to get that guy on their team. And that didn't happen. So instead, they get to choose a player. And they choose Bachira.
Yep. And Bachira has like a moment here right before the end of the episode where he's kind of walking away and he's like, well, this isn't what I wanted, but this just means that Isagi, you need to try really hard so that we can be back together again later.
Like, yeah. And his little monster eyes show up, you know, because Bachira is kind of a weird guy also. Well, there's a lot of weird guys in the show, but, you know, kind of like, you have to win me back now. Crazy right. Eyes.
And that's the episode. The other big thing I noticed in this episode, too, and I don't know if it's like deliberate or it's probably deliberate, but everyone's abilities or powers, it's changed color. Now, instead of glowing blue, they now glow green.
Yeah.
And that maybe is supposed to be an indication of that they've all leveled up, I guess. But I noticed that it was something that was consistent among all of them.
Also, I forget if it was this episode or the previous episode. But like, we see the new opening.
Oh yeah.
I don't know if it showed up. I don't know if it showed up on
No,
Tsunami,
it was at the end. This and Tokyo Revengers did this where the new opening was at the end of the episode.
Exactly. And then the next episode, I actually checked, this is the opening, right? There's no way this is the ending. And it's the opening. So
yeah, we'll talk about the opening next week because honestly, sure. I kind of forgot it.
It's kind of like, these sorts of things kind of make sense now. Like, I guess a lot of the 11 characters in the original team probably aren't that important. Like, we talked about people like Kuon a lot and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But they seem like they're probably not actually going to be like that important going forward. The ones that are important are the ones with like the different colored hair. Like, it seems like Chigiri and Kunigami, which is like pink and orange. Like, yeah. Okay, those guys seem to be important. We'll probably see that they're in the new opening. They have a more unique design and a more interesting, you know, backstory. Like, makes sense that these guys would be more like, they'll probably team up with these guys again. Like, they're going to get like a team of five eventually, right? I'm assuming
these guys so will be back. In round three, it's teams of three. In round four, it's teams of four. And in round five, it's teams of five.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was an okay episode. Like, it's I'd say this is okay for Blue Lock. Like, I'm going to just, at Blue Lock standards, I was fine with this episode. My biggest complaint would be that, and that maybe this is just a casualty of the adapting of this particular type of story to anime, but there's just so much of the episode where we're just listening to Isagi talk to himself in his head. And it's like, that's because so much has to be explained to the viewer. And so it's like, I don't know, there's a way around that. That's just how they do it.
Yeah. And some of this episode kind of feels like Bleach on a soccer field.
Bleach on the soccer field. I got some good episode titles here this week. I'm going to decide now. All right. Well, let's move on to the other lesser show on the block this week, Tokyo Revengers. Tokyo Revengers episode 13, Odds and Ends. So yeah, like we last week, which I'm sure you've seen now.
yeah,
shit really hit the fan. So
can I just say one thing though? I if I was on the podcast last week, I would have said this. I feel like the whole like premise of like, you know, meeting someone again for the first time since middle school, we're 26 now. And having like reconnecting like our long lost feelings is almost like hard for me to like believe that. And they even kind of mention this in the show where it's like, it's been 12 years. She's 26. There's no way she remembers me. And it's like kind of like, yeah, like it's hard for me to believe you went through all of high school, all of college. You worked a part time job for several years and you're still thinking about like your middle school crush. I don't know. That's a little bit weird to me.
I guess I didn't really think about that. I mean, you're right. I didn't really think about it though, because there was so much made about the fact that he was a loser.
Yeah.
And I guess he didn't really like, I mean, I hate to say that. You don't have to date to not be a loser, but I'm just saying like he said that of himself. Like he was calling himself like, oh, you know, I never had another girlfriend. I'm a loser or whatever.
I just feel like when I was in undergrad, like middle school was forever ago. Like I know they kind of like emphasize this, like, yeah, it's supposed to be like exceptional in this case, but still it's just kind of like almost hard for me to believe that they would, that would still have meaning for them. But anyways, on the last episode, this is the last episode. This is one thing that I don't think has really been explained yet. And maybe it doesn't need to be explained, but like in Takemichi's, like, I guess, like the prime timeline, if you will, he was dumped by Hina back in middle school. Like she said, let's break up. But it seems like in the altered timeline, he broke up with her and he doesn't know why.
Did you listen to our last episode?
No, I didn't.
Okay. So we did talk about this, but you just filled in something that we were missing. Right. I speculated that there must have been a change in the timeline, but I don't remember them ever. Are you saying you know that Hinata had broken up with him?
Well, he has this memory that she said that to him. Like, okay. Like there's a memory that he has in his head, and it's kind of like does like a memory sequence thing. It's only for like literally like 4 seconds. Where it shows Hinata and she says, hey, let's break up. And then like he's doing the thing where he's thinking to himself and whatnot. So like in his mind, he's thinking Hinata broke up with me. And that's why it takes him so long to realize, wait, something's different. Okay. Oh, in this new timeline, I broke up with her. And no one knows why. And I'm assuming it has to do with like stuff that hasn't happened yet. Like maybe he realizes, like if I'm going to be the head of Tokyo Manji, which we haven't gotten to yet, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, I need to break up with Hina to protect her or something or whatever. But, you know, things have changed.
Yes, we're on exactly the same page. I said almost verbatim the same thing you just said without knowing that there was that scene that showed that she had broken up with him. Because I don't remember that, but I'm glad to be proven.
It was literally like 4 seconds, like during one of his monologues.
But I said everything else that you said. It was like, okay. He has the memory of his previous timeline, but now he realizes that something's changed, that he most likely breaks up with her at Christmas because he needs to protect her or something like that. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, we had a lot to say about that episode.
Sorry about that tangent, but...
No, that's good that you mentioned that. I mean, like I said, it confirmed something I suspected, but didn't know for sure. Now, when we cut to this episode, we see Hina's funeral. Family's there. Takemichi's there. I'm going to say this really quickly. There was some debate in the thread about this, and I wasn't being super serious about it, but I did kind of like think to myself, like, why are you going to her funeral? If your plan is to undo this, it felt strange to me that he would go through this effort. But then I thought about it more and I'm like, well, what if he doesn't fix it? He would have wanted to have been there, I guess.
Yeah,
Naoto
at this point, Naoto, we keep saying Naoto, but it's not, or I forget what it is, whatever.
That it is guy. Naoto with an O at the end.
Okay. He even for a bit here is like, kind of like, obviously he's her brother and he's kind of distraught. Like no matter, even though we changed the past, it didn't change anything type of thing. And then kind of eventually over the course of the episode gets convinced, of an avenue to approach, to try something new, to try to get this actual future to change.
Yeah. When Takemichi goes to sort of pay his respects at the coffin, he stands there for a long time, kind of weeping a little bit. And the whole funeral, you know, Naoto's been, you know, putting on a strong face. But then when he sees this, he kind of breaks down crying. Afterwards, Takemichi goes outside and Hina's mom is there and she's very sweet. And she says, I wanted to give you this. And it was the necklace, like a charred up version of the necklace that he had given her, Hina. So he's got that now. We end up learning the reason after Takemichi and Naoto get together. We kind of learn a little bit about the fact that Akun's family had been kidnapped. And this is why Akun felt like he had no choice but to crash into the car and kill he was trying to kill Takemichi, but he ended up killing Hinata and himself. But that's why apparently his family had been kidnapped. And this is when Takemichi decides to tell Naoto his plan. His plan, of course, being that he is going to take over the Tokyo Manji. If he can rule the Tokyo Manji, he can prevent any attacks from happening. And they said, well, and before we go with the plan, we need to get some more information. Let's go meet with Draken. And we learn that Draken is in prison, and specifically, he's on death row.
He's on death row because he murdered someone. We don't know who, I think. Like, we can have guesses, but
right.
They don't explicitly say who he murdered.
No. I think didn't he say something like, I would have done it regardless, or like, am I imagining that?
He says, I'm trying to remember, he says he would change nothing about his life except for one thing, and the one thing that he would change is he would stop that other guy, Kisaki.
Yeah, Kisaki, the main bad guy. Yeah.
Yeah, we've talked about, like, he was sort of they've introduced him a while ago. And he's in the opening, and we knew he was going to be a problem later, and now is later. He's the problem. So,
yeah. When they're talking to Draken in prison, Draken says that he couldn't stop Kisaki, and Kisaki apparently, his whole goal, Kisaki's goal, is to take away everything that Mikey holds dear, which includes Takemichi.
Yep.
So that's why he's motivated to do that. By the way, I'm going to throw this out there since I could be a million times wrong about this, but I'm just throwing it out there. Okay. If there's going to be a twist in this show, it's going to be that Kisaki can travel through time.
Yeah.
I don't know that. That seems like I'll give that like a 30% chance of happening, but I just have this feeling that maybe Kisaki also has time travel and is like manipulating time in the same way. I don't know. That would be kind of convoluted if that's true.
And I don't want to get too deep into this because it's one of those things like maybe they'll explain it, maybe they won't. Sometimes time travel is just like this. But how the course of actions, the course of events that ended up with Akun pushing Takemichi in front of the train to kind of kick off this whole thing. Like, why did that happen?
You know? That would explain it, wouldn't it?
So
because Kisaki would have already probably gone through a loop or something, and he would have known. Yeah,
because right now that is sort of like the genesis of all of this stuff. But it's like, but what caused that to happen? And we talked about this before. Sometimes there's like closed loops where it doesn't really have there's no origin point or whatever. But yeah.
All right. Well, after they talk to Draken, they agree on Takemichi's plan. And so they shake hands. Takemichi goes back in time and he wakes up. This time he's in a public bath with Draken and Mikey. And there's just some like Mikey and Draken hijinks in the bath.
More comedy in the show. Yeah,
quote unquote comedy. And we do also learn, though, that Draken has healed. He says, I'm such a strong guy that my stab wound is, you know, he's got a big scar on his belly, but otherwise he's fine.
There was actually one line of dialogue in this section that did make me chuckle a little bit. When they're like horsing around, one of the things I think Draken says is, "Hey, that's my 2-in-1 shampoo and conditioner."
Yeah, he did say that.
Which, you know, it's kind of absurd, but I thought that was sort of like, you know, that he's so like explicit about like his shampoo and conditioner for some reason. And it has to specify that it's the 2-in-1. Like it's...
Whose was it?
I forget if it's Mikey or Draken. One of them shouts it out.
If it's Draken, it doesn't make any sense. He's like bald.
Well, he has some hair at this point.
Okay, does he? Okay, I don't remember. Yeah. All right.
I actually noted that like when they're in like the bath, his hair is like undone and it just looks more normal. But you know, when he like ties it up, he's got like half of his head is shaved and it's sort of in like a ponytail, right? So
also there was like this sequence. It's just like good times and they're just having fun, but they're also being loud and obnoxious to the other people. We didn't get any like reaction shots from the other people in the bath, but I'm okay with that. But I'm also like, it's, I think a subtle way for the show of a show that's not very subtle to kind of reinforce the fact that these guys are delinquents, you know? So even though when they're just having fun, they're also being kind of obnoxious.
could you imagine just being, you know, your age and at the bath? Yeah. And then, like, some, like, 15-year-old or 14-year-old are just, like, being obnoxious. It's just, like,
and they quiet down. They had a couple of, like, older guys sitting around, but they didn't complain. But then that's also pretty typical of Japanese to keep to themselves. But yeah, I was thinking that, too. I was like, God, these guys are kind of annoying. But I think that's
There's a very small moment where Takemichi kind of says something like, I hope you guys can do this forever. And they're like, oh, that's kind of weird. Like, we're just having fun.
Yeah.
You know, he has like an ounce of sentimentality because, you know, he knows this may not happen forever type of thing.
Yeah. So. Every once in a while, he'll like let it subtly slip that he's from the future. Mm-hmm. But everybody's just sort of like confused when he says those things. Anyway, they get out of the bath, they drink their milk. And as they're going out, we learn that they're about to crown the new third division captain. And we don't see who it is. I kind of assumed when I was watching this that it's Takemichi. But
well, I think Takemichi wanted to be the captain. Like, that was his goal. Like, if I can become a captain, that's one step closer to becoming the leader. But it's probably Kisugi.
Yeah.
But I also feel like, that feels like the obvious choice. But I also wonder, like, is it too obvious? Like, that's what they want me to think.
Man, I think it's probably what's going to happen. Because here's my reasoning, is that I fell for the obvious trap of thinking, oh, they're going to get ready and crown Takemichi because of all the amazing things he did. But I think they're going to twist it. And it's going to be like, Kisugi, here's Kisugi. And so that's what I think is going to happen.
And this is also last episode stuff. But like, we're still not 100% sure, like, this Hanma character, he's not really, he was like introduced a part of this other gang whose name I forget. But he's also like involved with this, you know, future stuff. Like, he's still alive. Like, what's up with this dude?
He was working for Kisugi in the future, which makes me think that his gang or he in particular was absorbed.
Sure. You know. Yeah, I'm sure we'll figure it. They'll explain it later. But yeah.
All right, so odds and ends. That is episode 13 of Tokyo Revengers. Yeah, I don't know. I don't really have any other thoughts about this. It's they just sort of answered a lot of questions, mostly.
Well, yeah. Now, so we're basically Takemichi is back in the past. We're in the second half of the season now. There was also the new opening at the end, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, now we have a bigger goal and a new like antagonist, I suppose.
Yeah. So like. Basically, what we were wondering is, like, will they save Hinata? No, they reset everything in a new way, and then they have to solve this problem now. So,
and I'm sure you guys talked about this on last week's podcast, but this feels very like time travel story, where when Akun crashed into the car, kind of the words he was saying before he died was like literally the exact same words he said before he died the first time. So, and Takemichi even noted this. Well, it was like Takemichi even notices, like, he's saying the exact same things. So kind of like, even though like the situation and circumstances are different, like the result is the exact same, like even down to what Akun is saying here. So like, you try to change time and some, you know, force just kind of resets it back to what it should be. You know, not that it's that's how it should be, but, you know, like Takemichi has to fight against like the forces of like time or whatever to alter the timeline. There's been time travel stories about this sort of idea, whereas as much as you try to change it, it like corrects itself in some sort of way. He has to try to figure out how to get over that.
I think it doesn't, to me, it doesn't bode well for the future of the show, though, because I feel like we're probably going to be doing this again.
Yeah, like, right. It might make a good like 90-minute or 2-hour movie to have this sort of time travel, like course correcting sort of thing, but this anime that's, you know, 50 episodes long or whatever, you can't have it just be like, we changed a thing and nope, it's back to same result at the end. We changed another thing. Nope, same result. Like, you can't just do that forever. There's got to be a wrinkle or a twist in it somehow.
Could be. Or yeah. But also you're right. It could be that, though. It could be that Hinata dies another way. You know, we'll see, I guess.
Well, like, they can't just have it be like, well, we tried 7 different things. And Hinata died all 7 times. Time to give up. That's the end of the manga. Like, that's not going to happen.
No. But what I'm saying is they could repeat it 7 times and then finally get it right.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like, okay.
I'm sure what it'll end up being is something along the lines of, like, why does time travel exist in the first place? Whatever the source of that is, they got to, like, tackle that or change that or something, and then timeline can change. Whatever being or power controls time here, we're probably getting to it. I'm probably getting too deep into this.
Thinking about that though is makes me chuckle because it's just like it is very hand wavy of how like Naoto and Takemichi are just like, yeah, let's travel through time. Let's go.
And all, we've talked about this before too, but like how does Naoto's memory work?
Yeah, we talked about this. Yeah. Apparently we figured out how it works. We don't know why.
He's just like living a normal life, and in this timeline, Hinata did not die. But like, when did he realize that she was like dead in another timeline? And she, does he have to like,
I'm assuming it's the same as it was with Takemichi, where it's like he just suddenly, my guess, because the difference is that he doesn't go through time,
right? So like how does he perceive it?
It'd be cool, it'd be kind of neat if they showed this, but I'm assuming what happens is that Naoto is sitting at his desk and then suddenly he's in a different place and he's like, whoa, what happened? Yeah, he doesn't have any new memories. He just is like, has to adjust, you know?
Yeah. Like, oh, the timeline changed and I'm aware of it. Like, this isn't, you know, anyways, it's weird.
Yeah. He doesn't know what's changed. He has to discover that, but he does, he can tell, oh, wait, I wasn't doing what I was doing a minute ago, you know? Okay. Well, let's round out the episode here and move on to the final premiere, One Piece. One Piece episode 775, Save Zunisha, the Straw Hats Rescue Operation. So I'm just going to tell you right now that this is a anime filler episode. I kind of forgot this existed. This actually is two panels from the manga stretched into an entire episode.
So basically we have to dress the wound. That's and there's it. A storm coming. That's all filler.
Yeah, just the we need to apply a bandage to heal Zunisha is the only thing that's covered in the manga. Everything else that happened in this episode is all just made up.
Okay, so in this episode, in the second part of it, Carrot is talking to Luffy and kind of mentions offhand, like, you know, your crew is so fun and your adventure seems so cool. I want to join you. And Luffy is just sort of like being loudmouth and kind of interrupting her and like, I just pack up the food. And when I was watching this, I was like, oh, this might explain why people kind of wanted Carrot to be a Straw Hat, because she showed interest. And if only Luffy would just shut up, he might have considered it. But he didn't. Like, was that all filler too?
Yes. Carrot
says like, I want to join you, and she even like mutters to herself like, I somewhere later in the episode, like, you know, the ocean is really like an interesting adventurous place, kind of like longing for it. So it seemed like it was sort of hammering here, you know, Carrot wants to go on adventures, if only she would join the Straw Hats, but we know that doesn't happen, or at least, you know, as far as I'm aware. So when I was watching this, I was like, oh, maybe this is why people wanted her to join. But now I'm a little bit like, if this was just filler, this wasn't in the manga.
Yeah, so I think what's happening here, I'm double checking to make sure that that scene wasn't in. I'm pretty sure it wasn't. I'm double checking. Oh. But I think what's happening here is the animators have foreknowledge of what's going to happen in the future. And so they're kind of inserting this.
Okay.
This is kind of a little bit of like them knowing where things are going to go. And they're just sort of like, oh, wouldn't it be fun if we included
this?
It's
like a wink. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm double checking here. I'm looking at the chapter right now, just making sure.
Because we actually were talking on a previous episode how, like, so going into this, so I'm the One Piece newbie here. Like, I vaguely know, you know, stuff through osmosis. So I'm not like completely in the dark, but I'm mostly in the dark. And I know people wanted Carrot to be a Straw Hat, but that doesn't happen. And when I'm watching Zoe here, and we actually talked about this, Carrot has mostly been in the background. She's kind of just been like Wanda's sidekick, and she's got like a cool design, and she's got like lightning quick reflexes or whatnot, but she really hasn't done anything. And I thought it was actually a little bit strange. Like, why did people like latch onto this person to like join the Straw Hats out of any other character besides, you know, Bisek? She's like a bunny girl, like literally. So I don't know if there's more to it than that. And yeah, in this episode, maybe here's the,
okay, I can answer your question without spoiling anything. And it's basically that the reason people attach themselves or like they kind of that she grows on them is because the things that it hasn't happened yet. Oh, okay. Just put it that way. But we meet her in Zoe.
Yeah.
But it's not until kind of after Zoe that people are like, oh, Carrot. So I'll just leave it at that. And then the other thing I'll say too is that I did double check. No, the scene with her being fond of going to see that is not in the manga.
That's like Toei, like wink and nod.
Toei being like, oh, we're gonna expand this, you know.
Yeah.
Okay. That kind of thing. And then the other thing I'll mention too is this isn't really spoilery because it's talking about the filler, but the filler, the little 3-episode filler arc that's going to come next. After
I forgot about this.
Yeah. Anyway, that we've got like one more episode of canon. Well, actually, let me explain. We have one more episode of Zoe. Then we have a 3-episode of canon. Meanwhile, somewhere else in the One Piece world, that's canon. But then after that, we have the 3-episode anime filler arc. And this is another thing where Toei was like, hey, let's expand on things. So
yeah,
that's all I'll say. But anyway. All right. Well, the only thing I wanted to mention about this, because like I said, it's all kind of made up. You kind of covered a couple of things. But anyway, you know, everything involving them talking about giving the map to Nami, the big storm front, all that stuff is all just them making things, making the like all the stuff with them. Oh, we're going to weave the bandages, all that stuff. It's all just filler. Okay. It wasn't in the manga at all.
Cool.
They bandaged Zunisha. That's all there is that's of import in this episode.
Good job.
Yeah. And you know what's funny, too, is that I think I saw this anime and hadn't read the manga chapter. So I was with you when I saw this the first time, thinking like all this Carrot stuff and all this stuff with them doing the bandaging and the storm. I thought that was canon when I saw it. And then when I saw the manga, I'm like, wait a minute.
Yeah, I wasn't sure. Like, I kind of just figure at default that, you know, Toei is embellishing or stretching things out or whatever. But sometimes I'm not sure, like, what is just inserted entirely. Like, this is entirely just inserted.
Yeah. Like this. I think they probably would have listed this as, like, partial canon. But It's only partial canon because of, like, the part where the only part they show in the manga is when they've kind of, like, got Chopper down there and he's, like, applying the bandage.
Yeah.
Like that.
Like, I could see that just sort of as, like, a flavor panel is, like, you know, in the aftermath, Chopper is checking the wound. Like, yeah, he would do that. Just a one image of Chopper checking the wound. Like, no, we got to make it a whole event.
I think it was that and, like, Chopper telling the, like, mink doctors, like, how to make the medicine. And then the doctors being like, oh, you're so skilled. That was basically it. So there you go. They don't really rescue Zunisha. They just sort of put a bandage on him. And that is it. That's One Piece. Like I said, next episode is the final episode of the Zoe arc. If you don't count the next 3, which again, that's always kind of weird because like when they do those, like, meanwhile, elsewhere on the Grand Line, you know.
Sometimes those episodes are really interesting.
Oh, I think they're almost always interesting because it's like, usually that's where Oda's like dropping like bigger hints for the future.
Yeah, I remember in the previous set of episodes, we were introduced to like, what was it? Whitebeard's son, supposedly. Like, oh, yeah. Some weird dude. Like, when is he going to show up again? And I remember your thought at the time was, I don't remember if he shows up again. Or maybe it takes a long time.
Yeah, I will tell you too that, did you watch the previous episode, right?
Yeah, I did.
Did you catch the bit at the end with Kaido?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so that was another bit of like Oda being like, yeah, here's something for the future.
And I think the next episode preview for this episode basically kind of framed it as, like one team is going to go take on Big Mom and rescue Sanji, and the other team is going to take on Kaido, and like they're going to take on 2 warlords, which I know is kind of like the next 2 steps in some order, but I'm assuming that's a lot happens in that in the process of that.
Yeah, yeah. So, they actually mentioned like two episodes ago that that was the plan, that they're right. going to, yeah, half of them, well, more than half of them, are going to go to Wano. And then the rest of them are going to go after Sanji in Big Mom's territory. So, and then like that's where we're going next, obviously, because Wano's later. So, yeah, we're going to go after Sanji. That's where the story goes next.
Sorry, I'm going to make the same joke that I've already made before, but Sanji is just going to be a quick in and out operation. No big deal. It'll be quick.
No. I mean, for what it's worth, though, it's a lot about Sanji. There's a lot to learn about Sanji.
Yeah, and we had mentioned when he was captured before, like he really didn't have a backstory.
No, aside from when he was raised by Zeff.
But we didn't know what happened before then.
Before that, right.
He was just a kid, you know.
Yeah, what we learned in this arc was that he's the part of some family called the Vinsmokes.
And some gang the Vinsmoke are like some cartel or gang or group. I forget what they're called.
Something. But yeah, we're obviously going to go there and learn about that. So, okay. Well, let's talk about flavor alerts.
Play flavor alert.
Potential award nominations.
Did you add any last week?
I think we might have.
I could maybe see adding was there anything in Tokyo Revengers that you added?
I did. We added worst moment, Hina's car go boom.
Oh, as a worst moment?
Yeah, because if you didn't listen to the episode, BB Boy was like, he said that, this is what he said. He said that it was a terrible moment in the show, and it's an indication of the downfall of the show. That's what he said. Okay. He said that
it gets worse.
He says it's going to get worse from here in his eyes.
I didn't think the moment was great, but I guess I don't know why it's so it's obviously a very dramatic moment.
I put it here and I said we could vote it out later, but his main reason that I got was that he was saying that he was frustrated that Hinata just sat there.
Her legs were crushed.
No. Before she got hit, she just let it happen. Oh. She didn't try to get out of the way. She just watched the car hit him. And then, I mean, honestly, he didn't do a really good job of convincing me, but it was something to the effect of like, he just didn't think the writing was very good in this episode. He thought it got worse. And
I don't think the writing is great in this show in general, no. But I also feel like if you're just sitting in a parked car and then you see like a truck going toward you at full speed from your rear, like you might like shock for a moment and you sit there for a few seconds being like trying to just, you know, trying to judge what's even going on, and like just a few seconds, a moment hesitation, you get crushed. And maybe the show, like, I don't know, exaggerates how much time she had.
Yeah, I mean,
it's like when something kind of comes at you so unexpectedly like that, like you may not have like that split second reaction time to, you know, like open the door and get out of the car. You might be like, what the hell? And then crash, you're dead.
Yeah. I and Crocodile both made the argument that like that Hinata isn't a gang member. So like she's just a normal person. So she might have been just kind of stunned, and that's why she didn't jump out of the way. But anyway, I put it on there. I thought, well, we'll revisit it later. The other thing we added, though, and this was kind of a post thing where like Crocodile wanted to add this after the fact, is that he wanted to add the episode Built Like a Brick Coop from Rooster Fighter as one of the best episodes of the year. That's the episode that was the finale of the Morio story.
Oh, yeah.
He thought that episode was really, really good. He said, let's put that on the best episode. And I said, sure, we can do that unless there's a better one that comes out later.
All right, well, best moment, adding the exorcism song.
So we'll call it the exorcism song. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, that was a great sequence.
But yeah, the whole Hina car thing, like, it was obviously a very dramatic moment. And, like, was it great? Maybe not. Like, but I probably wouldn't have called it worst moment.
Yeah. Well, again, we don't have to like.
We need nominations anyway.
So. We nominated it, but that doesn't necessarily guarantee anything. So.
All right. Anything in Blue Lock this week? No. Anything in Dandadan this week besides that? No. I think that's the main thing from Dandadan. Anything in Rooster Fighter this week? Rooster Fighter was a pretty interesting episode, but it was a lot of like backstory.
Yeah. I struggle to nominate things for Rooster Fighter in general, because I think it's a good show so far, but I don't, it's not, there's not, it hasn't been like moments or things that stand out to me. Other than I would say that the more I hear it, the more I'm really loving the voice actor for KG.
Oh, Patrick Seitz.
Yeah, I'm really digging it.
Yeah, maybe just nominate best performance.
Yeah, I think I am going to. Let's just do it. Because I don't know. Maybe I just love Patrick Seitz for whatever reason. But like him doing the voice of KG is like perfect in this show.
This role was made for him. I know it wasn't. Feels like it.
Yeah, he's perfectly cast.
I think I even mentioned on a previous episode that this character in Japanese is voiced by the Japanese voice of All Might. So like a similar type of character, you know, strong, buff, muscular hero man. Like kind of
fits. Well, see, I always think Gamagori.
Oh yeah.
Okay, got that. I wouldn't say like the KG versus
No, that was more like a quick fight. Like, it wasn't really a big fight. It was nice, but it was more just kind of like a quick, you know, showcase that like Keisuke is, you know, capable and strong and actually like outclasses KG at this point. But it wasn't really a big fight. Like, it was too short.
Oh, I've got one. I kind of just thought about this. This is one we missed. I want to add best name. Peeny Weeny. That's a great name. I don't know why I didn't add that the week he mentioned that. Okay. Anything else?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. All right. So that'll do it for episode 473 of the Toonami Escape podcast. Thanks for being here, Seda.
Yep.
And I want to thank Crocodile for being here earlier. We will be back next week. Same lineup. And let's see where we go from there. And until then, later.